Welcome back to another edition of the Inside Lacrosse Division III podcast. My name is Josh Davey, and always I am joined by my friends, colleagues, Dan Kaplan here in the Inside Lacrosse studios, repping Howard County, Baltimore, Maryland. And I'm looking at the beautiful beard, mustachio gentleman, Kyle Devitt via Google Duo or Skype, not really sure, but either way, we're dialed in, ready to go. Gentlemen, how you doing?
I'm good. Let's do this thing. Ready to roll.
I'm excited. Thank you for the beard compliment. I got to work on it. I'm working on it. Yeah. No, I'm styling it.
It looks good.
It's good.
The finger style is all you really need. It's very, very combed over and well-maintained. So just to set the table a little bit here, Dan and Kyle watched significantly more lacrosse than me this weekend, as I watched almost zero lacrosse. I was in Florida away for the weekend with some buddies for a bachelor party. I did at one point have the Lynchburg York game up on a table at a bar, and I watched York score one goal, and I was like, yeah, I don't know if this is for me right now. So I am going to rely a lot of the heavy lifting to go to my friends Kyle and Dan. So to start, like we always do, we're going to do a little weekend recap, hit on a few other notable scores, and then kind of look ahead. We are recording on Tuesday morning. This podcast will come out on Wednesday. And let's dive right in. One of the first games we want to talk about is the Gettysburg Bullets 10. Stevenson 5. Gentlemen, have at it.
Yeah, nice little nightcap to Saturday, 7 p.m. game. Thought the day was over. Then I was like, oh, wait, I have one more game left to watch. Everything went wrong for Stevenson. It's the best way to describe how the game played out. They did score the first two goals, but from there it was significantly downhill, a turnover fest. Nothing went right. I don't remember the last time I watched a game where you could see that the talent was there and the will and the desire and the schemes and everything, and the ball just never dropped right ever for that team. And a large part of that is the Gettysburg defense, their keeper McMillan out of this world, making great stops. Also, Stevenson hit like, I think six pipes. Maybe something like that.
Yeah,
and it was wild. It was a lot of pipes. And, you know, the Gettysburg offense just kind of came alive in the second half and really just ran them over.
Yeah, I agree. The Gettysburg offense was, clicking pretty well and did a really good job of sharing the ball. Defensively, they were really, really good, though. They were super tight and connected, and they do a really good job of taking away any type of crease feeds. Which, like you said, McMillan was seeing the ball. And so if every shot that he sees is coming from a savable spot on the field, he's going to tally up, tons of saves as he did.
I feel like were there some question marks coming into the season, early in the season, about McMillan? I feel like when I asked you earlier this week, like, hey, who started for Gettysburg? Because I feel like a little bit in the beginning of the season, there were some questions about whether McMillan was the right guy.
Yeah, that first game, he came out, and I think he only had three saves in his time and ended up getting pulled. But since then, he's been, lights out.
Yeah, I know Gettysburg has a couple injuries as well. They're hoping to get some guys back for the end of the season. But Gettysburg, like I said, the schedule doesn't get any easier for them. They'll play York on Wednesday night, which will be a pretty cool midweek game. I'm sure we'll dive into that a little bit here shortly.
Yeah, obviously we'll get there, but the midweek slate is going to be really, really good. We'll get there and preview those games, but that game is one of the group that's going to be really, really fun to watch in the middle of the week here.
Speaking of really good, Kyle, the NESCAC is back. The NESCAC is back. You like that transition right there?
It's clear you've been working on it.
Yeah, I'm working on it. Wesleyan 13, Bates 8. Bates, a couple injuries as well. I mean, that's what's crazy about this time of year is teams are still trying to figure out their identity, and their identity is consistently changing as guys go down and pull people and push people in different spots. So 13-8, Wesleyan takes this one. Kyle, what do you got?
Yeah, it was one of those games where early on it was very competitive. Bates and Wesleyan almost trading goals at a certain point, but eventually just the quality of the Wesleyan ride, the quality of their like intangibles, if you will, like the ability to clear, they're winning faceoffs, they were getting good looks on Cage. In the first half, they kind of struggled to get Ronan Jacoby the ball, which I think now as a big lefty, he's kind of become the focal point of that offense. And in the second half, a lot of balls on the ground, little bouncers, kind of guys just scrapping and getting balls out. There was one point in the game, one of the players' dads actually sent me a video of it. And I remember the play, Penny came across and hit like two dudes calling man ball, and the flag doesn't go up, but the whistle blows, and there's like just Bates bodies on the ground in the camera. Like it was perfect. It was like an action movie frame, like after the hero comes in and just takes everyone out. And there was just dudes like on the ground, like, oh, like getting up. It was kind of the perfect encapsulation of how that game ended. I mean, I think I had questions going into the game about how the Wesleyan offense would function, and they did struggle a little bit, but you know, they have some playmakers. They have some guys that are getting open, getting feeds. And again, I think the focal point is Ronan Jacoby, which doesn't surprise me at all.
Right. Yeah. He's awesome. And then Martello gives him a really good compliment as a righty. You mentioned how he's got a really strong lefty shot, Jacoby that is. And then Martello works on the opposite side, and he's also very, very good. And so you can't just only key on Jacoby when they are in their 6-on-6 set. If you lose sight of Martello, he'll make you pay too. And so,
yeah,
you know, they're going to be really good moving forward and continue to work those pieces out. And like you said, they're really just like organized defensively and in the ride. And so you're going to have to work for all your goals against them.
Yeah, I think in our text back and forth, I sent you, I was just like, Otto Bowen just like saves the ball and gets it out so fast.
Yeah, it's so simple and effective. It's just, he's awesome.
I will tell you, if you're
on that nasty zone.
So they bounce back and forth a bit. Man. They usually go to it like as a secondary option once the shot clock gets down a little lower, or they shoot a shot, or the opposite team shoots a shot that goes wide or something like that. They'll check to it. And now the other team's offense has to be able to effectively move from man to zone sets. And, you know, it's tough.
They'll also send Malarchuk after the ball carrier at a certain point and just be like, okay, let the dog off the leash and let him go. And that was really effective, especially when the shot clock was low. One of the things about Bowen too is because he gets the ball out so fast, that's one of those attributes that like higher level coaches really like seek in goaltenders. And the fact that he's a junior and he's like getting the ball out faster than I high praise here, but he's getting the ball out faster than a lot of D1 goalies. Like, it's up and it's out. He scans and he goes. He doesn't have any hesitation. You know what I mean? And maybe part of that is a lot of teams are subbing off after a long possession against Wesleyan with a bad shot. But part of it, too, is having that confidence and that ability to hit that guy on the run and create offense immediately from the back of the field.
Well, in the shot clock era, those extra 15, you know, with the 20 seconds to get it across, you can get those extra 12, 15 seconds because you're getting across in five. I mean, it is a direct correlation to offensive efficiency on the other end.
100%.
Yeah.
So both these teams take a break in terms of NESCAC play. They have a game or two out of conference, and then NESCAC play will kick back up. A couple other teams in action from this past weekend. So it's interesting. As we're looking at our shared notes right now, the line I read says, no FNM WNL question mark. I have a great Malahan stat. So I'm going to assume that Dan did not include FNM WNL because it was a little bit of a 10 goal game. But it looks like we are going to dive in here a little bit.
I mean, I just have a great stat, pulled it directly from the FNM Instagram. Kevin Malahan in his last two games, 8 goals, 1 assist, which puts him over the 200 goal club for his career. Wanted to give him a shout out. I think like, he's one of those players that we talk about, but maybe not enough, as one of the better players in the country. So just want to kind of throw that out there. And listen, I tried to watch this game. I also texted Dan while I was watching this game, and I was like, it's 8-0. Can I turn this off now?
Yeah, I'm tired of talking about WNL.
Well, I think this is like the time of the year where it's like, you know, you can't really hold stock in this team beat this team and then they beat them, so that means they're better than them, right? We talked about WNL last week just shellacking Washington College. And then FNM was just to a Lynchburg team that just lost to York and beats them by 10. You can't really hold weight in a lot of this stuff other than a few assumptions that, like, maybe Washington College's defense is very, very subpar. But it's hard to really take away some concrete takeaways from both WNL and FNM other than FNM is just blatantly a better team.
Yeah, I totally agree. And it seemed like things were starting to turn the corner for WNL, and they scored 23 on WAC. But then the following week, WAC gave up 18 to Widener, and it's like, oh my goodness, it wasn't that, you know, WAC really figured, or that WNL figured things out on offense. It's that WAC's defense needs to, like, I don't know, start from scratch almost.
Would you say it's WAC?
Nice. I actually said to Patrick before I walked in here, like, is it too low of a hanging fruit to say that WAC is WAC? And Patrick said that he would lose respect if I did say that. So I didn't. But I'm glad.
Yeah, but I'm in the same token, Patrick expects me to make that joke. So I'm going to.
1,000%. Part of the reason he told me not to was knowing that you would.
I think it's a long season. And I think, you know, playing the Centennial Conference, Washington College is probably learning a lot right now. About what works, a lot about what doesn't work, and hopefully they can dial some things in before we really get into Centennial Conference play in what is maybe the most competitive conference in the South.
Right, and I will give a little bit of credit to the F&M defense, but, you know, like we said, it's not like WNL has been putting up tons of numbers against solid defenses, so for them to hold them to 5, you know, is great, and obviously it's progress that we can't ignore, but, you know, It's not exactly hard to play team defense when you don't have to slide.
Well, that was what I was going to say, as we criticized WNL last week for not being able to beat a man and draw a slide. And it seems like that was the case again today. And F&M hopefully is taking a step forward, as we were very critical of them a few weeks back, as Lynchburg just kind of ran and did whatever they wanted them on the offensive side of the ball. So interesting dynamics moving forward for all these teams. Implications now and ripples now and wins and losses as it comes to whether your team is going to win your conference championship or not and get that automatic bid to the NCAA tournament. So a lot of interesting things happening. Definitely want to make sure you're checking the Inside Lacrosse scoreboard for rosters, for stats, for live stats on the weekends. It's really cool to be able to catch some of the live stats on the weekends as these teams continue to progress, because we're going to be looking back and be like, hey, does WNL have the resume to get into the tournament? And we're going to be looking back at these games being like, yikes, or for sure. So anyway, let's transition to a game that certainly had the interest of this three. It's with a heavy heart that I announced York 14, Lynchburg 7. Again, I did not watch this game other than maybe the first goal of the game. But I will say that Dan and I had a wager that changed a little bit through the course of the weekend, right? I think we were in a text exchange saying that rather than me having to throw on some ugly green York gear, I will donate some money to the One Love. This was a One Love Foundation game. Lynchburg was rocking some blue uniforms, and Coach Childs and Coach Kadelka had like kind of a little ceremony before the game. And they do some really cool stuff. So as the loser, I am also the winner, and then I get to donate to the One Love Foundation this week. So I'll be knocking that out in the next day or two. 7-goal disparity here for the Hornets. Looking at the box score for me, just with like a 1,000-foot view without having watched this game, 4 face-off wins. That kind of seems to be a huge question mark still for Lynchburg. They dialed in a little bit against F&M, but can't wave on the ball. Dan, how did this one kind of shake out for you?
That kind of hits it on the head. You know, it was really tough for them to generate any momentum on offense when they never really had the ball to kind of get into a rhythm. And then when they did get it, they were already a little bit behind, and they hadn't had the ball at all, and so they took some frustrated shots and forced things that just weren't there, which then led to Spartan possession, which kind of just created this spiral effect that they never were able to really adjust to that throughout the game. And you, like you said, at the faceoff X, JT Kidd goes 20 of 24. He took every faceoff for York. And then it just kind of felt like they were able to just dominate possession and therefore dominate the game.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. Going back to the point we made about F&M, Duffy, and WNL, you know, it's back and forth, up and down each week, both of these teams. So Lynchburg certainly has some stuff to figure out moving forward. As both these teams, like we said, right, York plays Gettysburg Wednesday night. Lynchburg moving forward, schedule remains tough. And in 2 weeks, fellas, we're talking about Mustang Classic. So that we'll dive into that a little bit next week to preview that. But I know that my schedule is cleared to be there, and I'm very much looking forward to that as well, to catch some of these North-South matchups. I know the NESCAC is not involved this year, but there are some other interesting teams we have not had a chance to get some eyeballs on, who will be making their way down to Owings Mills to Stevenson University that weekend. Let's move on to some quick hitters. Ursinus 13, CNU 11. The only comment I personally have on this is that, I'm sorry, Ursinus 13, CNU 9, read that wrong, is that Ursinus is super legit. And I think I saw one highlight of this game, and it was on Sideline Swap's Instagram. And it was the Ursinus goalie trying to box out a CNU attackman from, like, being able to run the ball out. And the CNU attackman dove, got his stick under the ball, threw it over his right shoulder, just right to a cutting from the baseline, over his shoulder to, like, a cutting CNU player who just, like, kind of dunked it in on an empty net. And it was an awesome hustle play. Those are the kind of plays that CNU makes, which is really cool. But Ursinus etches this one out.
Yep. Yep, exactly. They CNU, that is, they never quit. They play a style of play that is like, it's just kind of chaotic. And to your signings credit, they didn't let them get a whole ton of those types of plays. They get in the hole in transition. They play inside out. And then they take disciplined shots on offense so that you're not just like turning it over or just throwing it right to the goalie stick and allowing CNU to get some of those momentum building plays that always occur in transition. And then your sinus on offense is really, really slick. And their lefty, Hakan Atilisoy, I've talked about a couple times.
Yeah.
He is as smooth an attackman in Division III. His movements, like he just looks like he has always had a stick in his hand. And it's awesome. He's really fun to watch.
Yeah, one of those guys that kind of floats. You know what I mean? I talk about guys that are, especially their attackmen that play behind the cage or like kind of on that low wing, and they just kind of look like they're gliding a little bit on, especially when you're watching like D3 streams and you're like, is he flying? What's happening? He's just kind of gliding across your screen. I do want to shout out, you know, you did mention the Ursinus goalie kind of going out of his net. Chris Porzelt, he does do that a lot, but he also popped up 16 saves.
Yeah,
so
he's a madman.
Yeah, he does not care. I like players like that. That kind of goalkeeper style is especially in the era of like goalies only being involved in the clear as passers. Like he will come out for everything. Like I don't know how many times I've watched a game at any level where I'm like, why is the goalie not coming out? Actually, perfect example, not to like stray to D1, but there was a play in the Cornell-Ohio State game where Chase Ireland didn't come out and it was a loose ball on a ride. And like, he could have gotten there, but he stayed in the cage probably because like Trey LeClaire was coming.
Yeah, he's a big
but at the same time, like he could have come out and like at least disrupted the play or like kicked the ball out, but he chose to stay in the net, got scored on. It's one of those like gambling plays. I know in my heart that Chris Porzelt runs out and like doesn't even care about the ball and probably tries to hit a guy who's 50 pounds bigger than him. So again, big shouts to those guys. I think one of the things I had in the rundown here is, do we think Ursinus is legit? Is that like we're putting them at that kind of second tier of teams that are climbing into the first at this point? You guys agree with that?
Yeah, that's exactly where I would have them. I actually put together my top 20 the other day, and they were right in that tier that I don't think they're going to compete for a national championship this year. I think they're a little bit flawed.
They're under their coach for this. Gary Mercadante, this is the second
year. Yeah, second year there. He came from Laval, so he's kind of adjusting too, you know, and the players are adjusting to him, and he's implementing his style, and they're clearly taking to it, you know. They have a ton of fun. It's very obvious that watching their bench and watching their guys, they're having a ton of fun during their games, and, you know, winning helps.
Well, it's funny you mention that. I don't want to, like, stray too far away from the rundown here, but In my opinion, like in the South at least, tier one is just Salisbury, and then tier two is like eight teams that are almost as good as Salisbury. Do you?
I would put Cabrini in there.
Okay, that's
personally,
fair. That's fair.
Right?
1,000%. Yeah. I think that as a D3 community, we've kind of decided that Cabrini like lost too much last year, and I totally do not agree. The biggest loss they had wasn't actually Krug, who everybody seems to think it was. It was their goalie, and he was more of a leader from like an emotional standpoint. Like, obviously, he was good in the cage, but he was just an awesome leader. And that was really the biggest loss that I've seen this year. Not that Krug was, you know, easy to replace, but
right.
You know, they reloaded. They brought a ton of guys back, and then Tommy DeLuca at defense is a game changer.
I mean, I think the title exercised some demons from that team. You know, like the Cabrini teams of old. Not that we're making jokes about teams behind the scenes, but I don't think many people thought Cabrini was going to win the title last year at the beginning of the playoffs. I don't think many people did, unless you're a Cabrini fan.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? I feel like.
Well,
we expected them
to
crack
conference like 25 years in a row or something like that.
Right.
Not a lot
and
of
that's,
competition.
And when that happens, you kind of look at them and you're like, oh, well, they'll do that. They'll get in the playoffs, but they're going to lose in the quarters or they're losing the semis because that's what they've done.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden they get over that hump. They lift the trophy and maybe like mentally kind of unlock something for them that like, we can do this every year. which, by the way, happened with teams like Tufts, for example. Like that's one of those teams that happened to. I mean, Middlebury was rolling over people in the early 2000s. But if you look at the history of programs kind of coming into things, we expect Salisbury to be in places, right? We expect them to succeed. I think we're at the point where we have to talk about Cabrini in that, not at the exact same level that we expect, but they're in the conversation, I think, now for a while until they have like a big loss, which I don't really see coming at this point.
No, they stay kind of unblemished here early. They're going to be undefeated going into conference play and probably in the NCAA tournament. And do they play Salisbury later this year?
Yeah.
They do. So that game is going to have some serious implications. What did you say?
In York.
In York? Oh, they play in York. Got it. Okay, yeah. So there's definitely some big ones up ahead still ready to go. Dan is quick to remind me that they still have to play York. I love the goalie chatter so far between talking about the Cabrini kid from last year, the Porzel kid, and the Otto Bohan. There's a lot of goalie love, which I think is a good thing.
Shout out Jack Michael.
Okay. Here we go. Let's migrate north. Back to where Kyle's a little more – it's a little more Kyle's wheelhouse. Stevens, 16. Springfield, 8.
I mean – listen, it's a running joke on the podcast. I'm going to admit it. I don't like Springfield. And it's only because I played against them my whole career and they absolutely destroyed us in every game. And my last 2 years at Clark, the rest of the team was scared. And they were like, here's the ball. I remember actually, I'm going to tell this story and Coach Cohen's going to get really mad if he listens to this, but Jeff Cohen is the current coach at Clark University. Clark not having a great year, but hopefully they'll bounce back. And I remember he tore his meniscus against Salisbury when I was a junior and he was a senior. It was his last game. And he knew he tore it. He got up. He had the ball in his stick and he flicked it to me. And he was like, good luck. And like hobbled off the field. And I was like, I just remember I looked over and there's two giant Salisbury defenders or Springfield defenders like right on me. And I was just like, I don't even want to pass to. Oh my God. What do I do? And I just ran the whole game. Every time I got the ball, I just ran away from people. I couldn't because, I mean, the team was not good. But all I was doing was running. So, again, every time someone says Springfield to me, I flash back. It's PTSD. It's real bad. It's not great. That doesn't mean I'm going to celebrate their loss. I think this is actually more of a statement win for Stevens than anything else. And, you know, we're going to get to it, but Stevens has a huge midweek tilt that I think this game might pump them up for and kind of see them ready to take on a top tier team like Salisbury.
Yeah, they play Salisbury tonight because you're going to be listening to this on Wednesday, March 4th, Dan. I got it. Don't worry. I'm on dialed in. Interesting, you know, Dickinson is the only loss for Stevens so far. They fell to Elizabethtown last week, which is an interesting one, a big one for the Blue Jays program. So still, it's really hard to tell what these teams are going to bring every week. You really don't know. We really don't have a great grasp on like how legit some of these teams are, which is why I'm glad we hit on a little bit of, you know, who is legit, what are the tiers. I think it's a little too early to get into the North. In terms of those tiers, you can assume that NESCAC is going to be the top of that. But another good seamless transition on my end. Amherst 16, Hamilton. What is this? Amherst wins 16-8.
They had two games this weekend.
They had
Hamilton
two games
and Western New England. Got it.
And they were both 16-8.
Got it.
So
okay. I was like, wait,
it's confusing.
That sounds
yeah.
too perfect.
Yeah. No, they set you up.
So Amherst continues to roll. Kyle, did you get a chance to watch this one? Either of these?
I didn't get a chance to watch it, but I'm not surprised by the scoreline. You know, the thing that actually surprises me is that either one of those teams put up 8 on Amherst. Because I think, you know, one of the surplus things they have, talking about goalies, they got plenty of goalies throwing there, man. They ran 3 guys during their run to the championship game. Crazy. Like, who does that? Amherst does that. You know, they have a great defense. They have an excellent midfielder, Jimmy McAfee. Like, they have tons of players all over the place. You know, we talk about Cabrini kind of reloading. I think Amherst is still loaded. You know, I think Colin Minicus is one of the better underrated playmakers in the entire country.
Yep.
So I would definitely keep an eye on him. And, you know, they have a tight – again, we're foreshadowing the weekend preview, but titanic.
Titanic early is the perfect word to describe that game.
Tufts, unbelievable. It's at Tufts. I will be in the house. I have to. People are going to get mad at me. I'm not even going to tell people I'm coming as press. I'm just going to be in the stands because that's a can't-miss game.
So you're telling our listeners to come find Kyle Devitt in the stands at Tufts. Also a battle of probably two of the coolest mascots in Division III, the Mammoths and the Jumbos.
Yeah, I mean, listen, if anyone wants to get me a little horchata from that Mexican place on the corner by the practice field, hook me up. I'll be in the streets, I'll see you there.
The well-groomed beard and flat-brim hat, most likely, with the New Hampshire accent and probably a little bit of an attitude to whoever's taking his money in the parking lot. Just a little bit.
Yeah.
So let's look ahead. We mentioned Tufts. Tufts plays Springfield, Kyle's favorite team, tonight, Tuesday. I think we can all agree that, you know, there's not too deep we need to go into this one. I think Tufts wins, and it's another good opportunity for them to kind of get their stick in their hand as they prepare for that Amherst game. But also could be a possible trap game.
So, Kyle, if I put the over-under for Tufts shots at 70, what do you take?
Against Springfield?
Yep.
My heart and head say take the over just because I want to see it in the stat book. But I don't think they'll get that many. It'll probably be like 40, 50, something like that. Okay, they're still going to get a ton of shots.
Yeah, yeah, I only bring that up because they did log 80 shots against Colby this weekend. They had 31 shots between three players. Three players combined for 31 shots. That's more than teams take in an entire game.
I didn't take 31 shots in my entire career.
Yeah. That offense is scary, man. Maxwell Baum is no joke.
This is the best time of year. This might be the best Wednesday, Saturday slate we've had. So Wednesday, why don't we just give like a quick little, we can kind of go back and forth here as we have like a south-north kind of dynamic moving forward here in the balance of how we're going to run through this Wednesday games. Salisbury-Stevens. Dean, you want to take this one?
So if we're doing picks here, I'm taking Salisbury, and I'm taking them to win by a lot. I don't think that Stevens is going to be able to really generate any slides on them. They have some midfielders with some speed, but I just don't think that they're going to be able to make the short sticks from Salisbury pay enough. And then the Stevens best attackman, his name is Ryan Gebhardt, and he is very good. He's much better. Like, his game is really hands-free, though. And if they're not going to be able to generate slides to get their best player the ball with his hands-free, I think it might be a long day for that Stevens offense.
I like it. That's good analysis right there. Cortland, Wednesday night versus St. Lawrence. Anyone thoughts? St. Lawrence is a team we will see later, as I believe they're playing the Mustang Classic in 2 weeks.
Yeah, St. Lawrence, a team that probably they are probably upset we didn't talk more about them last year. 13-4, really a stellar season. I know Ken Stockman really loved watching them last year. Both these teams have early season wins that tell us nothing about how good they are, just because they're kind of like in that like SUNY system, and you know, teams just take wins off each other. Like their extra clothes while you're on a run. So, you know, it's one of those things where I don't know if this game tells us a ton because it's both teams' second game so far. But I think that the margin will tell us which team is better equipped to go forward, if that makes any sense.
Totally. No, I think that is an apt analysis. York, Gettysburg, Wednesday night we talked about it. York, Gettysburg coming off the win against Stevenson. York lost to Stevenson prior in the year. Is there any weight in that?
I don't know.
I don't think there is either.
The big thing about this game is it's almost like nothing else that's previously happened in the season matters. I'll take you back to 2016, your boys' senior year. Regular season, we beat them. Playoffs, they beat us. 2017, we beat them. 2018, they beat us. 2019, we beat them. And now...
2020 is Gettysburg beating York, that's what you're telling me.
I don't think that's going to happen again, but if history repeats itself, then yeah, I guess. But
I feel like these teams are very similar in like their trajectory so far for the season. Like, they have a couple big wins that are like not head-scratchers. Like, they're teams that we talk about often as being contenders in the South. Then a couple losses that are head scratchers a little bit. So again, as each team continues to try to like find their identity moving forward, this could be a big kind of like boost for either one of these programs.
Yeah, we've kind of talked about tiers, like that first tier are the guys that can really, you know, try and push for a national championship this year. And then that next tier of guys are guys that are all very good teams. But in that tier, I think any team can beat any other team on any given day. And so it's just going to be a matter of which team, you know, game plans better and comes into it and executes that game plan.
I like it. Yeah. Let's head up north again. Williams versus Union. Williams, my pick to win the national championship this year, Kyle.
Wow. That's
the F's.
That's, I think it's Eves.
Okay.
I'm not sure.
I should have tested that pre-pod, but okay.
Either way, F's is fine, I'm sure, because that's either way, it's a purple cow and it's hilarious. So
incredible mascot. Continue.
It really is. It really is. I've noticed a couple of teams going kind of throwback with their mascots. The Wesleyan mascot is super weird this year. It's not the same Cardinal. Yeah. Well, listen, let's talk about black helmets with all white jerseys.
Not for you. Mm.
When you have a chrome red face mask on a matte black helmet.
I mean, listen, if you don't have a white face mask on your dark helmet, like, what are you doing? I don't know. That's just aesthetics. That's just me. I've always felt that way. So, yeah, I think Williams Union is a team that, check this out, the only teams they lost to last year were Williams once and RIT three times.
Yeah.
They beat everyone else. And that Union RIT game in the playoffs, that was legit. They had them.
Yeah.
Union had them. They were on the run, and a couple, like, I'm going to say questionable calls cost them those turnovers. I remember watching that game and being like, wow, this Union team is really good. So this is an early test for Williams for sure. Definitely not something to overwrite. Williams kind of, you know, handling their first game this past weekend, 13-6. But, you know, I think I expect this Williams team to drop 15 on almost everyone.
They reload.
Just because that.
They reload in all caps.
Yeah, just – and they're only – they're better because they already have that year of experience and they're just ready to go. They've got an excellent mix of defensive schemes, players, Brendan Hoffman running out of the midfield like a Jolly Green Giant just pounding step downs. I mean, it's – a scary team. This is a sneaky, like, candidate for game of the week.
I'm into it. It's funny because, like, Tulsa plays Amherst March 7th, this Saturday, but then Amherst doesn't play Williams until April 11th. Like, there's so many times between these games that are so meaningful and, like, just getting that one kind of, you know, game ahead on each other within the NESCAC, which more or less is probably going to, minus RIT, we're talking about tiers, be the team, one of those three teams, right? We're talking about Williams, Tufts, Amherst, and then throwing RIT. Most likely going to see one of those teams representing the North in Philadelphia Championship weekend.
Yeah, I would put, if I had a house, I'd put a house on it. I don't.
That's big of you. That is like, that's a lot.
No, I mean, like, you know, New Hampshire's a land barren state. It's not that big, but I feel you.
No, I love it.
Tax talk on the D3 podcast.
There you go. It is. What is it? Super Tuesday today?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, well, I mean, not here.
Not there. I know you guys are done already. But anyway,
yeah.
Let's move forward. So let's dive a little bit deeper. Three games Saturday, right? So an amazing Wednesday slate: Salisbury Stevens, Cortland St. Lawrence, York Gettysburg, Williams Union. Saturday, let's talk about three games: Tufts, Amherst. And an analysis outside of both these teams are really good, I cannot provide. It's interesting because it's so early in the season to, like, be able to say how these teams are super different from last year outside of, like, just on paper, guys who are still there and guys who are not, returners and kind of who you lose. Either you guys have, like, a hot take or more of an analysis side to break this game down yet?
I don't know that I have anything, you know, super groundbreaking, but I am interested to see how Tufts decides to guard Amherst. Previously, the last, I don't know, I want to say that he's been there since he was a sophomore, but John Coffey's been the starting attackman for Amherst, who's now coming out of the box. And so it'll be really interesting to see if they decide, you know, to try and double pull, if they want to get a short stick on him or what they want to do, and then what Amherst does if he does get a short stick. And like you said, it's really early, so it's kind of hard to take, you know, any super, super big takeaways going into the game. But it'll be really interesting to see how that kind of progresses throughout the year with Coffey coming through the box.
Yeah, I think on the other side of that, you know, for Tufts, I do want to see how they play defense against Amherst. But what Tufts usually does is try to take one guy out, right, and then make the rest of the team beat them, and then kind of make that up in the middle of the field. And they tried that against Amherst last year, and it didn't work in the NCAA game because Amherst was able to run with them and get shots off and play the shot clock game and play the sub game just as well as Tufts could at that time. I think this is like such a cliche, but this game really comes down to who can kind of control the space between the restraining lines. I just think that's like such a key, especially because both teams have something to prove. I know it's like week three for them or like two, but both these teams have something to prove with a win here because it puts them, you know, in that conversation above the other team. And I don't want to be like also cliche and be like, these teams don't like each other, but the Tufts team is going to remember that loss last year. They remember because that game was super intense. I was on the sideline. I almost got ran over in the box because they didn't have anywhere else to put me. So I kind of sat next to the box in a chair and just was like typing things on my phone. But it was, there was some chirping, there was some little jaw wagging going on, but at the end of the game, I don't know if it's going to reach that same quality because we're too early, and I don't think either one of these teams, I think they're still upshifting to just get to where they're going to be, but again, that's why I want to see it.
Yeah,
I want to see it in person because then you can see kind of, okay, if this happens, this team gets better. If they fix this, this happens. It's a huge litmus test for both squads.
Yeah, it's funny. I don't mean to like steal anything from like Big Cat or PFT, but they always talk about Raven Steelers. It's like, throw the playbook out for this one. These are two hard-nosed teams. I mean, these are two teams that are really familiar with each other. I would imagine that as Tufts plays Springfield on Tuesday, which is tonight, this podcast will come out tomorrow, Amherst will have someone there as they don't play anyone the rest of the week to get ready for this game. I would imagine they'll have all eyes on this game trying to get whatever they can. Is there an advantage there? We'll find out Saturday. I'm not really sure right now.
Yeah.
Staying on Saturday slate, CNU Stevenson.
Man, this one in the past has been contentious. I think this is the first year that going into it, I think CNU has a really, really good shot of, you know, kind of being the favorite going into it.
I would agree despite, that I think CNU would be the favorite.
Yeah, despite that Stevenson, you know, beat York earlier in the year. But, it, you know, it's really interesting. And the fact that CNU lost to Sear Sinus, I think, only helps. They're going to go back, hit the books, and try and learn from that. The biggest thing CNU needs to address right now is a little bit of discipline and the decision-making side of things on offense. And we touched on it last week, but Dylan Rice isn't playing. And he's just so poised and calm and composed that, you know, that's 1/6 of the decisions that happen in one any given possession being made by somebody who has been around a while and, you know, is super poised and composed compared to the freshman that they're playing on that side right now at attack that may not make the best decisions at all times to sustain possession. You know, somebody might have a half step on the crease that they're feeding right now. But they're going to learn from that and adjust and, you know, realize that, okay, that was open there, you know, in 10 more seconds, if we can swing the ball to the backside and get it again, it's going to be 2 steps more open, you know, and that's kind of the growing pains that are going to come with playing a whole bunch of freshmen at attack right now.
It's interesting. I never really thought about it that way as like without your best player, a team's best player, not just Dylan Rice. Like, I mean, it's simple, I guess, the way you think about it, but like when you think about it for a percentage basis, it's very significant. Outside of just like the comfortability and the other intangibles you can't really quantify of having that guy out there. I also think the theme of this game is that discipline you talk about, right? We talk about Stevenson kind of run and gun. They want to shoot in the first 25 seconds of the shot clock. They're going to shoot, right? They're going to hit a million pipes. They're going to try to force you to the middle of the field on defense to try to bring you into the slides. Maybe that should be the title of this podcast today. We're always afterwards, Matt Kinnear's like, hey, what do you guys want the title to be? And maybe it's discipline, question mark.
Yeah. This game's really interesting. I think both these teams need this win.
Yeah.
Like, I know it's early, and, like, we probably shouldn't be saying that yet, but both of these teams desperately need a W.
And that's
especially Stevenson going into the Mustang Classic.
Right, and that's the beauty of Division III lacrosse is that every game matters, you know? Like, you're fighting for an at-large bid at all times. If you drop a game that you shouldn't, or if, you know, you don't show up one game, it's going to hurt you come May.
Dan loves D3 lax. You can hear it in his voice.
Damn straight.
He loves D3 lax. Stevenson, a big one in that after CNU, they also play FNM, Denison, Lynchburg, Salisbury. Before they get to conference play. So this could be their last opportunity for a big win. I think that they would be the underdogs against Salisbury, Lynchburg, Denison, and FNM moving forward. So like you said, Kyle, this is certainly a big one. Kyle's nodding his head a little bit. Maybe not. Very close.
Yeah.
You know, with two or three-point spread probably. But every game matters right now, man. It's crazy. Let's talk about a team, one of the more interesting teams in the Division III lacrosse landscape, who got a big program win. A week or two back, Illinois Wesleyan had beaten Ohio Wesleyan. They play Ursinus, a team we've talked about a lot. This is an opportunity for Illinois Wesleyan to legit break a top 15, top 10 ranking.
I would say top 15 for sure. It's like one of those things. I think I have one of my notes. Like, are we talking about Illinois Wesleyan too much? Is that what we're doing?
So much fun. We want to talk about fun teams. Just going like
16. Yeah, no, that's the answer. I'm just posing the question because I'm doing it. So I'm kind of asking myself, like, are you doing this too much? No.
23 and 24 goals our last two games.
Yeah, man, it's fun. They're crazy. This team's crazy. Like, why wouldn't we talk about it? And they're playing against a team that also can score goals and score clutch goals. So I don't think it'll happen, but I hope that Ursinus decides to run with them. I really do. Because
right.
I want to see what that offense does in a run. Run and gun type of game. That's what I want to see.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to see that. I think you're signing.
I know we're not. Come on. Like, we're playing to the people. That's what I want. I know it's not going to happen, but that's what I want.
Yeah.
If you guys, as we wrap this thing up, just think of a last question, sort of put a bow on this. When we're sitting in this small podcast studio and in a very quaint home up in New Hampshire next Wednesday recording, who are we going to be talking about the winner of this last week was?
Wow. What a bomb drop.
That is a loaded question.
Yeah, without any, no notes, nothing about it. I'm interested. There's so many games. I'm interested in who you guys, like, this will really show who you guys really like moving forward.
Yeah,
you want me to
I think
start,
it's going
to
be.
Set the table to give you guys a minute?
No, go for it. Yeah.
I think Ursinus, well, no, I guess they don't really play Saturday. We kind of need to talk about a team. I think Salisbury remains unblemished. And I think York beats Gettysburg, and we're looking at York beating Lynchburg and Gettysburg and really getting kind of their motor going again. I think York, we're going to look back next week and be like, York's going to be a top five team.
Wow.
So right. My pick for this, it's...
I'm making your job easier
by
York, too.
Also true. But I think that Salisbury, if they just continue to stomp teams, they're building this, like... superhero persona so that by the end of the year teams are going into that game scared, and so if they can come out and just stomp Stevens after Stevens has had some pretty good success so far this season, Salisbury may be coming out as that, like, we're just gonna stomp everybody that we, you know, see.
I really want to do like a trick thing where I'm like, the loser of this game will be motivated because they but the reality is it's For me in the NESCAC, it's whoever wins the Tufts Amherst game this weekend has the advantage going into conference play, which, you know, they're kind of, you know, dipping their toe in here and there. They're not getting, like, we're not getting huge matchups every weekend, but we're getting really good quality games. I think, you know, if we're looking at NESCAC, we're looking at a title contender. The team that wins Tufts Amherst is the team we will talk about next week.
Yeah.
And I don't know which one. Don't make me choose. I can't. I actually love both those teams, and I love those coaching staffs. So you're going to make me, aren't you?
Well, we can get some D3 picks. Maybe we'll take a little bit of the proactive approach and get our D3 picks out for this weekend. Because I know we've done them, but I don't know if they've been on Instagram. So maybe we'll push a little bit here and there to try to get those up there for the three of us, and maybe throw in Stockman or Kinnear as well. But I think that's it. I feel like we got through a lot of games here. It's a really, really big week. Week 3, week 4, however you want to kind of count it, if you include week 0, whatever that's supposed to mean. So we'll continue to kind of bring the heat on our end, try to give you guys the in-depth analysis on all of these games. We will continue to get better. really looking forward to the Mustang Classic in 2 weeks to be able to like really get some eyes on a lot of these teams we're talking about. But make sure you're staying tuned, following me at JoshDavy5, Dan at DKaplan46, at the Kyle Devitt for everything. You guys like how I memorized those for this week? I don't even have any notes on that. That was pretty good. A lot of chatter going on between the three of us throughout the weekend. So if you have any questions or a team we don't know about, we're not talking about right now, shoot us a DM, you know, shoot us a note, emails, fine, all at insidelacrosse.com. And we'll continue to get better and really fired up to, you know, see some of these teams really find their identity moving forward. So we will see you guys on the other side.